"Move now! Go!" I shouted at Aidan, and we hurtled forward, men and cart exiting the workshop together, and then shooting out into the night. A moment later, the dog was after us, barking and howling, calling for his masters. Outside, there was no sign yet of any Welsh, but it surely could not be long before they responded to the dog's bark. Across the parade ground we ran, cart bouncing along behind us, spears and shields clattered up and down, and some fell over the side, making a dreadful din as they crashed to the ground. One shield jumped up into the air, and then it came spinning back down and landed on the hound. He was knocked down and stunned, but at least it stopped the barking, for the moment. "Carry on, don't stop now," I urged Aidan on, although we were panting under the effort. I could now see our two companions lurking in the darkness next to the building we were heading for. Lila seemed to be laughing. We came to a halt and stood for a moment, catching our breath. Lila took pity on us, and running to the cart, found an axe, and then still chortling, he ran with it to the workshop door. He removed the bar with one hand and tossed it to the side. Then he thrust the axe blade into the gap between the doors and gave a mighty wrench one way and then the other, cracking the wood around the lock. The door was still shut and the lock was holding. Lila tried again, but the wood was strong and he could not yet break it open. Over towards the headquarters building, there was a cry of alarm and a dozen Elmete armed with swords and shields came running at us. "Edward!" I yelled. "Edward, can you hear me?" Inside the building, I heard a muffled response. "You must break the door down. Quickly, man!" I then turned and rooted about in the cart for a moment, found myself a shield, and then gave a whoop of triumph as, underneath the shield, I saw the sword that I had taken from the Welsh warrior I'd killed at the villa. I seized it eagerly and went and stood beside Aidan, who was armed with a spear and a shield. The cart and the corner of the prison building were either side of us and gave us some cover as well as protecting our flanks, at least until the Almate could work their way around the other side of the cart. The first two warriors arrived and charged straight forwards, one swinging a battle axe and the other a sword. I took the blow on my shield and then hacked back with the sword. I connected with the man's shoulder and he fell away, blood pouring from him. Aidan had been knocked over by his assailant, but that meant the Elmete was now on my flank, and I cut across at him and felt the blade slice into his sword arm. He dropped his sword, staggered backwards, and Aidan, following up, rammed his shield into the man's face, crushing his nose. As he fell to the ground, Aidan picked up the man's sword and slashed it across his throat, killing him. To our left, Lila had found a bow amongst the weapons and was firing over the cart at the group milling about it. Wallace was conscious again, at least for the moment, and having located his sword, was standing in the gap beyond the cart holding back four Welshmen. I caught the look of exhaustion in his eyes and knew he would not stay on his feet for very long at all. Suddenly, the cart moved. Three of the enemy were pulling it away so they could get at us. Lila seized one handle and heaved it back towards him. Wallace staggered across from the wall of the building and held on to the other. But they were outmatched and outnumbered, and a moment later there was a gap in our defences, and a half dozen of them were surging through it. From behind me there was a crash and a splintering noise, and the doors burst asunder. With a roar, Edward came out first, swinging a loose plank of wood and leading the company in a charge. They fell upon the stunned and outnumbered Elmete like caged and very angry bears, suddenly finding themselves free. So the fight did not last long after that. Quickly now, every man armed himself. Cuthbert took his bow back from Lila and examined it anxiously, like a mother taking her child into her arms. So, we had our weapons back and had freed the company, but now we had to find our captured families and still get away. The exhausted Wallace was loaded into the empty cart, and we headed towards the barracks, which Aidan said the prisoners were kept in, all the while waiting for the next attack. As I headed that way, I felt a hand on my shoulder, and I turned to see Grettir looking grim and unhappy.
"Master Curdick, you've given that slave a sword," he said with a jerk of his head towards Aidan.
I sighed wearily. "He took it himself from a man he killed, Grettir."
"But your father said—"
"My father is not here," I shouted, and several of the company turned at the noise. I lowered my voice and whispered to my tutor, "My father is not here. I am. So leave it, Grettir."
"But—"
"I said leave it," I shouted. And Grettir recoiled, then just nodded his head curtly and said no more. I headed away from him, leaving him to brood on his own, I had no time for discussion. The sun was just starting to rise now and cast its early light on a dozen bodies lying on the ancient fort's parade ground. I wondered how many more would be dead before the sun went down. To the north of the parade ground, beyond the storehouses and workshops, there were two rows of long and low barracks buildings. A row of six immediately across our path, and then another row between those and the north wall, where there was a gatehouse. Narrow paths passed between each barracks and the adjacent one, linked to another path dividing the rows, thus creating a maze of passageways. "This way," shouted Aidan, running down the middle passageway between buildings which each possessed decaying roofs and rotten doors. Up ahead, the narrow passage and the one joining it at right angled formed a crossroads. Suddenly, just as he reached this junction, Aidan gave a cry of alarm and tumbled to the ground. In the space where his head had been a moment before, a spear point was thrust from around the right-hand corner. Edward was just behind Aidan and had to swerve to avoid being impaled himself. He ran on past the spear and, twisting as he did, grasped the shaft and pulled at it. With a curse, a surprised enemy warrior came hurtling forwards, unbalanced, and then, as he tottered forward, he fell to the axe of Sigmund and a swift stab of my sword. Edward carried on round the corner to the right, followed by Aidan, who had now got to his feet, Cuthbert, three others, and then me. We found a dozen more Elmete lurking between the back of the barracks and the front of the next row. The space was confined, and the numerical advantage of the company pressing up from behind was not going to help. The enemy warriors levelled their spears and advanced towards us. Suddenly, from the rear of the column, I heard Lila give a shout of surprise. He had been hauling Wallace along on his cart, helped by two men, and had been caught by more warriors coming from Samlin's headquarters building, across the parade ground. One of the company was now dead, and Lila was swinging a sax wildly at three warriors while screaming for help. The other man, a lad from Wixton, held five more at bay with his spear. Grettir took half a dozen men back to help, and they charged at the Welshmen, drove them back, and then retreated, pulling the cart across so that it partially blocked the passageway. More of our men rushed to the rear, and with a clattering of wood they linked shields to block the approach. Lila staggered forward to the crossroads, blood trickling from a wound on his scalp. He leant against the wall of the barracks and took several deep breaths. I tottered over and joined him and looked around, trying to work out what to do next. The fight was now in the tightly confined spaces at the company's rear and along the right-hand passageway. That left two routes still open. The left-hand passage was blocked by rubble from the adjacent building, whose rear wall had collapsed into it and thus was impassable. The way ahead seemed clear, and peering that way, I could see it led to the palisade at the north wall of the fort, the wall opposite the way we had come in. "Aidan!" I yelled. Aidan was fighting in the right-hand passage. His enemy, a big brute with a bald head and scars all over his arms, was swinging a huge two-handed axe. Aidan watched the weapon come at him, parried it with his shield, and then rushed the man, hacking at him with his sax. The man brought back his axe to block the attack, and then they were locked in a desperate exchange of blows. Distracted by Aidan, the warrior did not see Edward's spear thrust until it had impaled him. With the warrior to his front writhing on the ground, the Welsh slave rejoined me. "Which way are they?" I shouted above the din. He pointed further along the passage leading through to the next row of barracks. "That way, and then turn left before you reach the outer wall. Be careful to the right, though, because the northern gatehouse is there, and it will be manned. The prisoners are in a barracks, two over, with a door facing the north wall." I looked back down the south passage and saw that Wallace was unconscious again and slumped in his cart. Sigmund was his second in command, and I shouted to him. "What is it, lad?" he bellowed and looked my way. "We have to go this way, Sigmund. Aidan says that that is where our people are." "You sure you trust him?" he asked, looking doubtful as he disengaged from the fight after being replaced by another man from the village. I looked at the Welsh slave and thought for a moment. Not before an hour ago, but he had plenty of opportunity to betray us, besides which his parents are prisoners of Samlin as well. Sigmund nodded and waved several of the men past him up the passageway. Just then, Cuthbert yelled out for our attention. He was gesturing, but not into the melee that rumbled on in the side passage, but upwards towards the roof of one of the rear barracks. Three Welsh warriors were up there and were shooting down at us. One missile grazed Cuthbert's shoulder and buried itself into the ground behind me. Another flew high and smashed ineffectively into the wall to my side. The third arrow, let forth from the bow of its archer, flew straight and true towards us, finally smacking, with a sickening noise, into Sigmund's throat. He stared at me with an expression of complete disbelief on his face, staggered back against Aidan, and finally slid to the ground, quite dead.
"Bollocks to this!" Cuthbert swore, looking down at Sigmund's body.
Then he whirled round and shot two arrows at the enemy. The first skewered an archer through the face, killing him instantly. The second hit his comrade in his shoulder, knocking him screaming from the roof. The remaining archer flashed him a look of abject horror and then scuttled back over the rooftop and out of sight. The closest of our men had seen Sigmund die, and many were now looking restless and began to edge back away from the enemy. If I was honest, I felt like joining them. Wallace was unconscious, Sigmund dead, and the man who had fallen at the rear of the company was the oldest headman of the other village contingents. If Cuthbert had been here, he would have been next in line. But he was not, and whatever Father said, I was unsure I could fill his shoes. Suddenly, Lila was at my side, looking sadly down at Sigmund. Then he studied my face, and I could see that he could detect the doubt in my eyes. Lila, used to reading an audience, could also feel the panic rising about him. But he also knew how and when to play a role, and did so now.
"Master Curdick, what are your orders? Should we carry on down this passageway as Sigmund ordered?"
"Well, I might not be as bright as Lila, but I hope that I am not as hesitant as Ethelric. I could take a hint, and gladly took one now."
Edward, you and 20 men hold them here. Lila, go and tell Grettir to start pulling back this way, and then try and get Edward to force a path along that eastern passage. We need to get to the east gate and out that way if we are to find the road home. I'll get the prisoners and return here. Go now," I added, as loud as I could, trying to sound confident. Then, turning to the men around me, I shouted, "Everyone else, this way, follow me." Not waiting to see if anyone followed me, I ran. It was not much of a speech, and I just had to hope they would follow me. Aidan told me later that most of the Wixton company had looked doubtful at following such a youth, but Lila, Cuthbert and Edward bellowed acceptance. Cuthbert and Aidan ran after me, and after a moment the rest of the company followed behind. I was a wet behind the ears youth, but I was still heir to the villa, and that gave me authority. Or else, perhaps the men just wanted someone to make the choices for them. I didn't care. Follow me they did. I now had 40 men with me. The other half of the company was fighting under Edward and Grettir. I reached the end of the passageway and glanced right. There was the gatehouse, just as Aidan has said. Half a dozen Elmity were on the battlements above the gateway, peering anxiously towards the noise of the fighting. When we emerged, they gave a shout, and one of them started firing slingshots at us, though at the extreme range we were at, they fell well short. I left Cuthbert and 10 men to harass them with arrows and slingshots, and carried on around to the barracks where the prisoners were. I thought of Mildred somewhere within, no doubt terrified by the noise of fighting, and having already suffered the gods knows what horrors, and rushed on, eager to free her. Aidan was by my side, motivated by the thoughts of his parents, and kept pace with me. So it was that we did not see the two horsemen until it was almost too late.
"Look out to the right!" one of the men yelled, and we saw them at the very last moment, two immense horses galloping straight towards us. Astride both of them were armoured horsemen, their mail armour glinting in the sun, giving them a golden appearance. Red cloaks streamed out behind them like tongues of flame, and in front, aiming at our hearts, a pair of long lances with bright, sharp points, which now came to claim their victims. Neither I nor Aidan had spears, which might have kept the horses away, but instead both of us carried swords. Our only hope was agility, and we leapt apart and rolled across the ground. Hooves thundered by an inch from my face. One of them caught my sword and knocked it out of my hand, whilst another had hit Aidan in the side of his chest. He now lay, a screwed-up ball of agony, by my side. The horsemen galloped past and turned to come again, but then they spotted that the rest of the company had caught us up, and outnumbered as they were, the enemy fell back towards the corner of the fort, where they watched for a chance to dart in again and strike at us. Aidan got to his feet, and we were off again. The barracks were unguarded, but had been locked, and so one of the woodsmen from Little Compton used a wood axe to hack its way through the door. Once inside, we discovered a scene of utter pandemonium. The villagers and townsfolk were convinced the Welsh were coming to kill them now, and so, screaming and panicking, they had backed away into a corner, mothers hiding their children behind them, all their faces pale with terror. At first, after we had entered, we were not recognised by the bewildered captives, but one by one the prisoners saw a familiar face and relaxed, cried out, and then rushed over to us. I looked about for Mildred, eager to find her too, but she did not seem to be there. Frantic now, I searched around, yet still I could not find her. Moving through the excited throng, I came upon Aidan. He had located Gwen, his mother, and was standing next to her holding her hands, so I rushed over to them. Gwen! Where is Mildred? I can't... But my words caught in my throat, as I saw that her eyes were red and full with tears. I looked down, and there I saw Carefid, lying on a pile of rotten straw, with a filthy sack for a blanket laid upon him. His eyes were open, but they looked up at us blankly. He was clearly dead. He was injured the night of the raid, Master, Gwen said with a sob. They made us march through the night to get here, and he had already taken a fever by the next day. I pleaded with them for help, but they just laughed at me. I said I was Welsh, but they hit me and said I was a traitor to Britain and Eberarkham for serving you Angles. I looked across at Aidan. His eyes were red as well, but sorrow was starting to fade to hatred, and then to anger. He got weaker and died in the last hour, Gwen finished. I put one hand on both Aidan and Gwen's shoulders. I'm sorry. If I'd been faster, maybe... Gwen shook her head. No, Master. He was already dying. Best he died in peace than have to be dragged along in torment. I nodded, but now had to ask about Mildred. Gwen looked at me, suddenly shocked. Master, forgive me. I tried to protect her and hide her, but that monster with one eye came looking for her last night, seemed to know she was here, and asked for her. She still hid, but he found her, and then the brute dragged her out, screaming. I'm sorry. I was horrified. Salmon had not thought much about Mildred before last night then, not until I had lost control and blurted out her name. It was my fault she was gone. What did he have in mind? I was afraid I knew, but asked Gwen. I did not like the sound of that. He seemed very taken by her. She's a beauty, and there's no mistake there. He said something about saving her for the victory celebration, and that she would not have to wait too long. I had to get away and find her, to find Samlin and his men and free her, but I knew I could just not run out on the company, so instead I swore under my breath, and then shouted, perhaps harsher than I needed, for everyone to get outside. Once outside, I looked around at the captives. There were 30 of them, of which only 10 might be able to fight if they needed to. We armed these as best as we could. Then, with my eyes lingering on the pair of horsemen still circling off towards the corner of the fort, we herded our people along and set off back towards Cuthbert. It appeared that no more guards had joined the half dozen already at the gates, so I left in watching them and started down the narrow passageway. I had hoped to force a way towards the east gate and get on the shortest road home. However, when I reached the crossroads again, I saw at once that this was not going to be possible. The fight had been escalating whilst I had been away. The south passage was blocked by 20 Elmete, and the cart, which now had one wheel hacked off it, lay tipped over at an odd angle. Wallace was being helped back to where I was. He looked at me through misty eyes, and I could see that he would not be able to yet take his command back. To the east, Edward's predicament was even worse. 30 or more warriors lay that way, and they had formed a solid shield wall at least 5 men deep. Edward staggered back to me, blood dripping from a gash above one eye. It's no good, Curdick. I can't get out that way. Right, damn, There was nothing for it but to retreat back to the north side of the fort and go out the north gate. To do that, I had to capture the gate. "Hold them here!" I shouted at Edward, and then turned to the rest of the men, shoving the townsmen out of my way. "Back! Go back! There's no way out this way. Follow me!" And I pushed through them to the space between the barracks and the north wall. There were still only handfuls of Elmete here, and only half a dozen were holding the gatehouse. I sent Aidan and 30 of our men towards the gate to try and force it open. Turning back, I groaned when I spotted the other passageways running from the centre of the fort to the north gate. Two on either side of that where the company were fighting. The two western ones I was not concerned about, as many of the buildings over there seemed to have collapsed and blocked the passageways. The eastern passages were different, however, because the Welsh might try and bring men through them to outflank and surround our men still fighting in that maze. I took Cuthbert and the few archers and slingmen we had and stationed them near the passageways to fire on any sign of movement. Meanwhile, I went back and found Grettir. He had now retreated to the junction, was holding well there. Edward could not progress, but he was holding his own. It was a tricky manoeuvre, but they now had to pull back both of their groups into the northern passageway. It had to be at the same time, and we needed to be able to form a shield wall again once we had done it. Edward glanced across at Grettir, who nodded, and they both shouted, "Run, lads!" Both of them at the same time hacked wildly about them to hold back the Welsh. Their men ran towards me, while I stood in the northern passage with half a dozen more men. We let them pass and then shouted to Edward and Grettir. They turned and ran. Arrows spat at them and spears thrust forward, but the Welsh were impeded by being bunched up, and with Edward grinning wildly and Grettir panting hard, they both passed me and we closed the gap. I left Grettir and Edward to command the rearguard and ran back to the gate. The cavalry force had grown. Four more had joined them through a gap in the west wall, and there were now six of them, but still not enough to worry us too much. I was more anxious that groups of the Welsh would appear through the other passageways, so I knew we must quickly take the gate. Rushing to the north gate, I saw that it was shut and barred from the inside, which is where we were, and thus we should be able to open it. However, an archer and a slingshot man on the battlements above the gate were keeping us away by an intermittent but accurate fire. At least one missile had found its mark, for I now spotted a youth from the village lying on the ground, his face screwed up in agony and holding an arm, which looked broken. One of the other men was examining it and trying to strap it up. Cuthbert had joined us when he saw the problem and was exchanging shots with the gatehouse. However, he had now started to run out of arrows and was taking those fired from the battlements and using them against their former owners. Others joined him, and soon they gave a huge cheer as the Welsh archer felt screaming an arrow through his lungs. The slingshot man hunkered back down and kept out of view. I picked up an abandoned shield, pushed through the company to the front, and found Aidan. His face was grim, but when he caught me looking at him, he looked away. "Time for talking later," his face said, and he was right. Lila appeared, and I sent him to fetch Grettir and Edward and their men. "Right then, we need that gate open. Come on," and I ran forward screaming. Leadership seems to be mostly about running towards the enemy and hoping to the gods that the other bastards followed you. Today they did. With a huge roar, the company surged forward and reached the gates. The men on the battlements above us pelted us with whatever they could find or knelt and thrust spears down at us. We held our shields over our heads to protect us, and I heard a din as something hard bounced off mine. A moment's effort had the bar on the gate removed and the gates pulled back towards us. I stepped to one side and let the company pass and the townsfolk follow. I then looked back towards the passageway, waiting for Grettir and Edward's group to emerge. At first, no one came, but then at last I saw them backing out of the passageway. Over towards the corner of the fort, the cavalrymen saw them as well, and sensing an easier target, moved towards them. "Edward," I bellowed, trying to draw my friend's attention to the danger, but he was too far away to hear me call. "Cuthbert," I shouted, now near in archers, but when Cuthbert arrived he had his bow, but no arrows left. I looked desperately towards my other friend, my tutor, and the dozen men with them. The horses walked forward, the lances dipped, and as the riders dug in their heels, the horses started to trot, and then canter. "Edward," I screamed, knowing it was in vain. My friends and the other men were doomed. Then the horsemen charged. Chapter 11. The Army. As the galloping horses pounded across the ground towards him, Edward finally heard them coming and turned to see death closing in on him mounted on iron-shod hooves. Desperately, he dragged two men round, and together they levelled their spears to try and deflect or impale the horses. It would not have been anywhere near enough to stop the charge, and the armoured cavalry would have cut down our men like a scythe in a field of barley. Ironically, it was the Welsh themselves who saved my friends. What I had feared earlier, that more Welsh would emerge through the eastern passageway and surround us, now happened. A dozen Almaté warriors had been pulled away from those following up Edward and Grettir and had run down the adjacent passage. Emerging on the open ground, they swung round to cut off our men. In so doing, they saved Edward and his companions' lives. For now, as the cavalry charged forward, they saw, with alarm, that their countrymen were suddenly running in front of them, and in desperation they heaved on their reins and turned away, aborting their attack. They then circled off to the west to regroup. I knew that this was our only chance to get away, and I took it. "Aidan, a score of you, come with me. Charge!" I ordered, and off we went, crashing into the rear of the newly arrived Almaté, who was surging around Edward's beleaguered band. Our attack took them by surprise, and we cut down a half dozen before they reacted. The momentum took us right through them to join up with Edward. Now united, we quickly slew the remaining Welsh surrounding us. "Right, that's it, pull back," I shouted, and as a tightly huddled mass of 30 or so warriors, we retreated towards the gate. Shields overlapped shields, and spears projected in all directions. The Welsh harried us all the way, but they had suffered many losses, and once we joined the others at the gateway, we had over 80 warriors and 30 townsfolk, and were far too strong for them. Neither, however, did I feel that we were strong enough to force our way back through the fort, even if we outnumbered the Welsh. There were also the horsemen to worry about. Outside the gatehouse, the track led us northwards. I had hoped to pass round the outside of the fort and reach the eastern road home to Deira, but I saw now that this was not possible. The ground sloped away steeply towards the river, and at the bottom of the slope it was marshy and boggy. Half a dozen men might make it, but well over 100, including injured men and townsfolk, would not. So, I turned my gaze north. The track exiting the gate, where did that go? Ah, I said to myself, Wallace's map, that was the answer. I rushed over to where he was resting, supported by two men from Wixton. Inside the fort, the Welsh were gathering, and the horsemen were hovering 50 paces away. Still, there were only 40 or so Welsh in all, too few to attack us, for the present. More may come soon, though, and I was anxious about how many horsemen they had in total. I had to decide what to do, and quickly. My lord, I said. There was no response. My lord, I said again. And he at last opened his eyes and looked at me, but without recognition. Lord, it's Curdick, Curdick, son of Kenred, from the villa. Finally his eyes widened and he focused on me. Curdick, where are we? Still in Calcaria. We are trying to escape, but I need your map quickly. He nodded, but then coughed violently for several moments, and I glanced anxiously at the enemy, every second seeming an eternity. When he finally recovered, he reached inside his tunic and pulled out the oilskin-wrapped parchment and handed it to me. "Curdick, I'm sorry," he said. I'd shook my head. "Not your fault, Lord. Just rest, and we will get you home." His head had slumped again. I feared I was lying to him. As it was, he was not likely to make it home. Then again, were any of us? I rolled open the map and stared blankly at the markings and symbols. I recognised the lines representing the rivers Derwent, just west of the villa, and the Ouse, and also the fort of Calcaria. If that was the fort I was looking at, then the track looked like it was once a Roman road and went north, and then bent to pass over a tributary river that joined the Ouse further east. I followed the line beyond the crossing, and it reached a large town or city. There were letters next to it, but like most angles, I could not read. Lila, I shouted. The poet jogged over to me. I showed him the map and asked him what the city was. Here Forwick, Curdick. Is here Forwick? That's only 20 miles away, if I'm right, I mused. Lila nodded. That's where we're going then. Then I raised my voice to get everyone's attention. We go this way. It's 2 miles to the river and another 10 to Ere Forwick. Then we will be safe. Grettir and Edward will lead, with half the men. Then the townsfolk will follow them, and finally Aidan and I will bring up the rear with the other half of the company. Lila, you come with me too. Everyone, keep your eyes open for more horsemen. Stay together, and we will make it. Let's go. So, off we went. The path sloped gently downhill. To our right, the ground fell away steeply, but to our left it was all flat and open fields. Some distance away, there were more woodlands on the other side of the fields. All was clear in that direction. I kept an anxious eye behind me on the Welsh. They let us leave, but most of them followed us at a distance of a few hundred paces, hoping perhaps that the column would begin to drift apart and there would be stragglers to attack. I was worried about that too, and I did not let Edward set a pace that was too quick for the women and children to keep up. So, for an hour, we walked along the track at little more than a crawl, and like wolves, the Welsh kept pace with us. A group of them even started to overtake us to our left, moving parallel with the road, but too far out of bow range for us to shoot at them. I could do nothing to stop them, so I let them be. One relief, at least, was that there were no cavalry in sight. Lila pointed that out. "Those damn horses are not following," he muttered. "Thanks be to Odin for that," Cuthbert replied. "You fool, it's worse not knowing where they are than being able to see them," Aidan grumbled, and I glanced towards him. He was walking along with his mother, supporting her as she stumbled along in his arms. I had misjudged him gravely, and he had risen above that to, well, to all intents and purposes, to save us. Yet, where was I taking him to? Back to slavery under his old masters? Life must seem pretty grim for him.
You had to say it, didn't you? Tempted fate you did, Cuthbert replied. Then I saw why. The cavalry had not left us. Now they were back.